Chapter 7. Roanoke revolves around its sun every 323 days. We decided to give the Roanoke year 11 months, 7 with 29 days and 4 with 30. We named a month for each of the colony worlds our settlers came from, plus one for the Magellan. We dated the first day of the year to the day we arrived above Roanoke and named the first month Magellan. The Magellan crew was touched, which was good, but by the time we named the month, it was already Magellan 29th. Their month was already almost over. They weren't entirely pleased about that. Shortly after our decision to start allowing the colonists to homestead, Hiram Yoder approached me for a private meeting. It was clear, he said, that the majority of the colonists were not qualified to farm. They had all trained on modern farming equipment and were having difficulties with the more labor-intensive farm equipment the Mennonites were familiar with. Our stores of fast-growing, genetically modified seed would allow us to begin harvesting crops within 2 months, but only if we knew what we were doing. We didn't, and we were looking a potential famine in the face. Yoder suggested we allow the Mennonites to cultivate crops for the entire colony, thus ensuring that the colony wouldn't turn into an interstellar Donner Party 3 months down the line. The Mennonites would apprentice the other colonists so they could receive on-the-job training. I readily agreed to this. By the second week of Albion, the Mennonites had taken our soil studies and used them to plant fields of wheat, maize, and any other number of vegetables. They woke honeybees from their slumber to begin doing their pollination dance, pastured the livestock, and were teaching the colonists of 9 other worlds, and 1 ship, the advantages of intensive and companion planting, carbon and calorie farming, and the secrets of maximizing yields in the smallest amount of space. I began to relax a little. Savitri, who had been making jokes about Long Pig, found something new to snark about. In Umbria, the Fuglies discovered that fast-growing potatoes were good eaten, and we lost several acres in the space of 3 days. We had our first agricultural pest. We also completed the medical bay with all its equipment in its own black box. Dr. Zhao was delighted when, within hours, she was using her surgery bot to reattach a finger a colonist had inadvertently sliced off with a bandsaw during a barn raising. In the first weekend of Zhongguo, I presided over Roanoke's first wedding, between Catherine Chow, formerly of Franklin, and Kevin Jones, formerly of Roos. There was much rejoicing. 2 weeks later, I presided over Roanoke's first divorce, fortunately not of Chow and Jones. Beata had finally gotten her fill of antagonizing Jan Kronjek and let him off the hook. There was much rejoicing. By Erie 10th, we had finished our first major crop harvests. I declared a national holiday and day of thanksgiving. The colonists celebrated by building the Mennonites a meeting house, for which they only occasionally needed to ask for advice from the Mennonites themselves. The second set of crops was into the ground less than a week later. In Khartoum, Patrick Kazumi went with his friends to play by the stream behind Croatoan's western wall. While running along the stream, he slipped, hit his head on a rock, and drowned. He was 8 years old. Most of the colony attended his funeral. On the last day of Khartoum, Anna Kazumi, Patrick's mother, stole a heavy coat from a friend, placed rocks in her pockets, and waded into the stream to follow her son. She succeeded. In Kyoto, it rained heavily 4 days out of every 5, spoiling crops and interfering with the colony's second harvest of the year. Zoe and Enzo had a somewhat dramatic breakup, as often happens when first loves finally get on each other's nerves. Hickory and Dickory, overstimulated from Zoe's relationship angst, began openly discussing how to solve the Enzo problem. Zoe finally told the two to stop it. They were creeping her out. In Elysium, the Yotes, the coyote-like predators we had discovered on our barrier, made their way back toward the colony and attempted to work their way through the colony's herd of sheep, a ready source of food. Colonists began working their way through the predators in return. Savitri relented after 3 months and went on a date with Beata. The next day, Savitri described the evening as an interesting failure and refused to discuss it further. With Roanoke autumn in full swing, the last of the temporary housing tents folded for good, replaced with simple, snug houses in Croatoan and on the homesteads outside its walls. Half of the colonists still lived in Croatoan, learning trades from the Mennonites. The other half carved out their homesteads and waited for the new year to plant their own fields and yield their own crops. Savitri's birthday, as measured on Huckleberry translated to Roanoke dates, occurred on the 23rd of Elysium. I gave her the gift of an indoor toilet for her tiny cottage, connected to a small and easily drained septic tank. Savitri actually teared up. On the 13th of Rus, Henri Arlien battered his wife Therese on the belief that she was having an affair with a former tent mate. Therese responded by battering her husband with a heavy pan, breaking his jaw and knocking out three of his teeth. Both Henri and Therese visited Dr. Zhao. Henri then visited the hastily assembled jail, formerly a livestock hold. Therese asked for a divorce and then moved in with a former tentmate. She hadn't been having an affair before, she said, but now it sounded like a damn fine idea indeed. The tentmate was a fellow by the name of Joseph Loong. On the 20th of Phoenix, Loong went missing. "First things first," I said to Jane, after Therese Arlien came in to report Loong's disappearance. "Where has Henri Arlien been recently?"
"He's on work furlough during the day," Jane said. "The only time he's allowed to be by himself is when he has to pee. At night, he's back in his stall at the jail."
"That stall's not exactly escape-proof," I said. In its former life, it had held a horse.
"No," Jane said, "but the livestock hold is. One door, one lock, and it's on the outside. He doesn't get anywhere overnight."
"He could get a friend to visit Loong," I said.
"I don't think Arlien has friends," Jane said. "Chad and Ari took statements from their neighbors. Pretty much all of them said Henri had got what he deserved when Therese hit him with that pan. I'll have Chad check around, but I don't think we'll get much there."
"What do you think, then?" I asked.
"Loong's homestead borders the woods," Jane said. "Therese said the two of them had gone for walks out there. The Fantis are migrating through the area, and Loong wanted to get a closer look."
The Fantis were the lumbering animals some of the folks saw at the edge of the woods not long after we landed. Apparently they migrated, looking for food. We had caught the tail end of their stay when we arrived. Now it was the early part. I thought they looked about as much like elephants as I did, but the name had stuck, whether I liked it or not. "So Loong goes out to look at the Fantis and gets lost," I said.
"Or gets trampled," Jane said. "The Fantis are large animals."
"Well, then let's get a search party together," I said. "If Loong just got lost, if he has any sense, he'll stay put and wait for us to find him."
"If he had any sense, he wouldn't be chasing after Fantis in the first place," Jane said.
"You'd be no fun on a safari," I said.
"Experience teaches me not to go out of my way to chase alien creatures," Jane said, "because they often chase back." "I'll have a search party together in an hour. You should come along."
The search party began its search just before noon. It was 150 volunteers strong. Henri Arlien may not have been popular, but both Therese and Loong had a number of friends. Therese came to join the party, but I sent her home with two of her friends. I didn't want to run the risk of her coming across Joe's body. Jane blocked off search areas for small groups and required each group to stay in voice contact with one another. Savitri and Beata, who had become friends despite their interesting failure of a date, searched with me, Savitri keeping a tight grip on an old-style compass she had traded for with a Mennonite some time before. Jane, some measured down the woods, was accompanied by Zoe and Hickory and Dickory. I wasn't entirely thrilled with Zoe being part of the search squad, but between Jane and the Oban, she was probably safer in the woods than back home in Croatoan. 3 hours into the search, Hickory bounded up, shadowy in his nanomesh suit.
"Lieutenant Sagan wishes to see you," it said.
"All right," I said, and motioned for Savitri and Beata to come along.
"No,"
Hickory said.
"You only."
"What is it?" I asked.
"I cannot say," Hickory said. "Please, Major, you must come now."
"We're stuck in the creepy woods, then," Savitri said to me.
"You can head in if you want," I said.
but tell the parties on either side so they can tighten up. And with that, I jogged after Hickory, who kept an aggressive pace.